Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with Tiffany and myself, Stephen. Now, this week we're talking about something that we were talking quite a lot about, but lately it seems to have fallen off our radar a little bit.
But let's talk a bit more about it.
Because the Strait of Hormuz, remember that?
Yeah.
It's less than 40 kilometers wide at its narrowest point. It's a critical passage for a quarter of the world's seaborne oil. And it's turned into a choke point with Iran demanding for countries wanting safe passage, asking them to come up with some money, pay a toll.
Yeah, and then much closer to home, we have the Strait of Malacca. It's the world's busiest shipping lane with only 3 kilometres at its narrowest point.
And Singapore has maintained that we will not negotiate with Iran for safe passage in the Strait of Hormuz because transit through waterways is a right, not a privilege. And doing so will set a precedent for countries in our region to demand toll fees. Mm. But I guess as the world becomes more uncertain and fractured, I guess the question is, how long can we stick to this principle? And why does it matter so much for a small country like us here in Singapore? You know,
I mean, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. To help us unpack these questions, we are joined today by Minister of State for Foreign Affairs, Zulkarnain Abdul Rahim. Welcome.
Hi, Tiffany. Hi, Stephen.
Okay, let's set the scene again for those who aren't quite up to speed. As of 11th May, when we're recording, that's today, there are two competing blockades at the Strait of Hormuz run by the US and Iran. Data from an international ship tracking firm indicates that at least 6 cargo ships have crossed the strait since last Wednesday, but no tankers, and some 1,600 ships remain stranded in the Persian Gulf.
So we want to ask straight up, beyond the increases in prices of, you know, our goods and services and also oil, what else is at stake here? Help remind us a little bit.
Well, actually, whatever happens in the far side of the world will always affect Singapore. We are always an open economy, always dependent on global trade flows. Whatever happens over there will impact our pricing, food, energy, but more importantly, the positions that we take overseas vis-a-vis any issues that impact that side of the world will also be taken to impact us, because we are a nation that prides itself on principles. Mm. And we want to make sure that whatever we say remain consistent, and when we can live with it for years to come, because the positions that we take in a particular issue will of course affect another issue that we have here, Straits of Hormuz, right? Mm-hmm. You mentioned it, Stephen, okay, that it impacts, it's what you call a choke point. But actually it's not, suddenly it doesn't become a choke point overnight, actually. It has always been a choke point. It has always been a maritime choke point. It sees about 30 to 40,000 vessels per year. And actually, when this thing happened, it just, I think everyone then realizes how important is it.
Yeah.
But for Singapore, we always knew how important sea lanes are, because we are always been a maritime trading nation. And Straits of Malacca and Singapore actually sees almost triple that vessel traffic.
Yep.
120,000 a year. That's about almost 300 per day.
Yeah, it's pretty much the busiest shipping lane in the world, but that's for all kinds of goods.
And all kinds of goods.
Strait of Hormuz is more for oil, right?
Oil. So you see, LNG, oil goes through there.
Yeah.
Ours, anything you buy from Taobao, anything that you buy from commodities goes through it.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, Straits of Hormuz may power the world, but we, Straits of Malacca and Singapore, moves the world.
Mm.
Actually,
yeah,
everything goes through here. Mm. So anything that we take vis-a-vis Straits of Hormuz issue will have to be seen in light of what we feel important for us in terms of our sovereignty, in terms of our security, in terms of our livelihood here.
But that's a standpoint that we take. We say we choose to abide by the rules. We choose to follow the letter of the law. UNCLOS, for example, I mean, we choose to abide by that, but that's not the same for everyone. So before we dive into that, can you help our listeners understand a little bit about what UNCLOS is? Give us the 30-second version if you can.
Okay, UNCLOS stands for the United Nations Convention Laws of the Sea. Basically, it's the constitution of the sea and encompasses all activities and aspects of what we have to do on the seas, like navigational rights, freedom of transit, and all that. Singapore is one of the major founders of UNCLOS more than 40 years ago. And we believe in UNCLOS because it's very important for us as an open economy and trading maritime nation as well. And for countries that actually are not even signing or parties to UNCLOS, we believe, and our position is that rights of transit passage or navigational rights are actually part and parcel of customary law, which is actually within enshrined in UNCLOS. And so, whether they have signed it or not, it's binding upon them. It is a codification of what is decent, what is important, what is accepted with between nations to regulate navigations, flow of goods.
Yeah.
And on top of that, there's this thing called the international customary law.
Yes.
And it's basically a set of rules that you and I know. As human beings, we know that shake hands, say hello, be nice to each other, don't commit crimes. Those, you don't need the penal code to tell you that.
So from my understanding, UNCLOS is supposed to be enforceable, right? But the US and Iran, they're not bound by UNCLOS.
It is not just an understanding. I think in Singapore's position is that it is part and parcel of the law.
Mm.
And you cannot pick and choose what aspect of the law that you want to
right.
adhere to, what aspect of customary law that you want to abide by. It is the whole system, and UNCLOS is so comprehensive, and it needs to be understood in that regard, and every country is bound by it.
But whether the or not US you will sign. Say, I didn't sign. Why am I bound by it?
Yeah.
I didn't agree to take part in this, so why am I bound by it?
Whether a particular state says that it is not bound by it or what, there is a certain expectation that they need to have an open agreement or acceptance that the goods, seafarers need to be safe going through a particular passage. What, especially in terms of passageway, there are waterways that are natural. What we call a term of art, straits used in international navigation, as SWIN. As the Straits of Hormuz, Straits of Malacca, or Singapore are actually SWINs. They are actually natural body of water. What I call what is not made by men must be meant for all men.
Okay.
So actually, you cannot suddenly suka-suka say that.
I can't say I didn't take part in this, I didn't sign it, so therefore I'm not a part of it.
Of course.
You're saying it's an understanding everybody in the world has to abide by this.
From old times, right? We see piracy, we see people trolls under toll bridges and all that, imposing the weight of themselves onto passerby, people who are using seafarers. This is something that is contrary to international law and also UNCLOS. And I think when we understand it as a world, as a community of seafarers, as a community of maritime nations, we must understand that the right of transit passage is sacrosanct for everybody.
But right now, what we are seeing are these two trolls, so to speak, under the bridge blocking the Strait of Hormuz, right? And what can we do about it? So I'm saying we all may say, I choose to abide by this, but when we are in the one suffering, then how?
So we have to balance between, of course, principle adherence to rules and also pragmatism, right? We look at how we can do things together with each other. It's like water. Water finds a way around it, right?
Alternatives.
Water will flow around a rock and all that. But it means that things will get more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And for the troll that actually imposes that blockade or impedes, if no one goes through it, and actually the world suffers for it, at the end of it, everybody suffers for it, including the troll.
So I think it's good to be principled about stuff. Like, I, for one, believe that, you know, we should maintain some principles, right? But at which point should we then reconsider this thinking? I mean, I know you stated a hard no, right? But then if, let's say, we have to balance between survival, and I'm talking, you know, down the road, what if things get worse? And we're talking about survival. At which point do we have to reconsider this principle we hold so dear?
See, there are certain things that are really, you cannot trade away. Your right to survival, your sovereignty, things that impact our livelihoods, our Singaporeans, I cannot put that at stake. There's no price to that. You cannot put a price to that. And if someone tells me that the life and future of the future Singaporeans and how we shape the economy in the future will be able to be traded away, will be negotiated, now that's something I will not be able to accept. Whether in the region or internationally. And I think for every country who are like-minded like us will understand that. And the only way around this is actually to find like-minded countries and find ways to live with each other and find a way to respect whatever norms that we have set up over 40 years ago, time immemorial, and to make sure that we all play by the rules. So you see, as neighbors, right, we build fences, but not to keep people out, but actually to show where we stand and where they stand. I'm the sort of person who actually stops at the red light, even though there's no traffic, right?
I think you should. Yeah. But the giveaway line, let's...
Even though there's no traffic and even though there's no camera looking at us.
Yeah.
But that's a reflection of who we are as a people, and we want everybody to abide by that. And I think to look at ways... We are not neutral for the sake of being neutral, right? Or we are not really self-absorbed in terms of our interests. We're not team sitting on a fence. We are team Singapore.
Yeah.
Anything that advances Singapore's interests, we need to push for that. And to have this notion of free right of passage is very important because 120,000 vessels, as I said, go through Singapore.
Yeah. But then now that like Malaysia and Thailand, they're negotiating the safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz, are we looking at like a, you know, critical number of how many states would consider before we also decide that like, yeah, maybe we should join our neighbours?
Now it's easier to hold out because we are among the larger number of countries, the majority. But if everybody starts negotiating, everybody starts doing their side deals and they're saying, okay, Singapore, you didn't make a deal, you don't get anything. And
then
at some point in time, we'll be like...
The little kid that nobody wants to play with.
Well, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Okay.
Because the state of play right now, of course, no one can guarantee any safe passage anyway. And the slippery slope that we are on is that the moment you negotiate, the moment you trade away, the moment you put a price tag on it, it means that your principles can be bought, can be traded, can be paid off, right? So the moment that we do that, we are not going to have a position of strength to start from.
But how long can we hold out?
Well, that all depends on the state of the world.
Yeah.
So, and that is why multilateral forums, negotiations with like-minded partners to make sure that the oceans fall, talk to everyone else. And by and large, the not just maritime nations, trading nations, shipbroking companies, P&N clubs, they all understand, the shipping industry understand that this is important, and they are by and large, the majority are with us, are with UNCLOS. And it's not just about sticking to the rules for the rules' sake. It's because that set of rules are important and it works. It works for many, many decades and it should work in the future as well. And beyond that, we are also working with our the littoral states in our region, our neighbouring countries as well on cooperative mechanism, on our traffic separation scheme or what we call TSS. Yeah, think of it like a superhighway code, right? Who keeps to the left lane, who keeps the right lane, and these are vessels coming in and forth. And if you think about it, there's so many players out there, so many people who will go through the Straits of Hormuz, will go through the Straits of Malacca and Singapore. And if there is a price, there is a blockade, there is a kind of a toll to be paid, the water will find its way around us. And what will that mean? It will be difficult for us to continue as a trading nation, open economy. And this issue, Straits of Hormuz, as Stephen, you mentioned, it has always been a choke point, but everyone's thinking the unthinkable. Mm-hmm. Now, what if that happens to us? The question now is, do we panic and everybody run for himself or herself, each country for itself, or do we then still maintain this compact of law, of rule-abiding nations, of making sure that we don't break away and cause further fragmentations in the global economy?
So we do have diplomatic talks with our neighbours to say, hey, this is our principle and we would prefer if you don't do that in the Strait of Hormuz because that will impact our region. Are these the talks that we usually would have with our neighbours?
For our neighbours, we have always had constant understanding and basically our joint statement to say that such imposition or impediment on rights of transit passage would be contrary to international customary law and UNCLOS. And we also have agreements within our region here, Straits of Malacca and Singapore, to allow for movement of trades and goods. And there's always that agreement. And we are always working together for not just the trade flowing of vessels, but actually environmental impact, safety of seafarers as well.
But all this only works if everyone agrees to play by the rules. Right? If after a while you're the only kid playing by the rules and everybody else is out doing their own thing, then it doesn't make sense. So I guess the question is, at which point do we need to start worrying? Because right now things are bad, but they could drag on maybe 1 year from now if we have this conversation where countries are saying, I am really tapped out. I am so desperate. I need to make this work. They would maybe start negotiating because it's survival of the people in their country, right?
Well, first, I think that's a hypothetical that's quite won't happen because it is not a case where the world will be drained out of supplies. The supply will come, whether it is from the West, whether it's from another route, it's just a price point. In Singapore, we want it to be more affordable for our people. Mm-hmm. We have, of course, our support packages coming our way. We have diversified energy resilience agreements with other countries. We're not just getting energy from the Middle East. We're getting it from Mozambique, from Australia and all that. So we are getting there. The only people, I think, in the long run, the region that will suffer the most will be the Middle East. Because they have supplies that cannot go out. They have flights that are being diverted away. And the beneficiaries would be all the other states that have these kind of supplies. And the most important thing, the critical thing that we need to do is actually to build two kinds of resilience. Resilience of supply and energy and resilience of our people as well. Because yes, in the short term, we may have some inconvenience. But in the longer term, we need to move away from certain supply chains and then have really diversified supply. But that can only work if our Straits of Malacca and Singapore remain open.
Yeah, I guess for us, it's the idea that, okay, even if we compromise in the short term, we are looking at it from a long-term perspective, right? We don't want to say yes to paying, you know, for this safe passage now and then to have to suffer for it for generations to come. But I think the new world order looks like, you know, countries are being a little bit more protectionist, a bit more inward-looking as well. We have always touted this idea of let's be more collaborative, let's work together. But at which point for Singapore do we then go, we need to be self-sufficient, but also at the same time, we need to not undermine our reliance on other people?
Oh, yes.
How do we balance that?
So you got to find the like-minded friends to play with. So you don't want to be the only kid left in the playground, right? With no one else to play with, and there's no... when there is a bully, when there's a huge influence or in the playground that who picks and choose who they want to play with, then we say, okay, that your suka lah. Then we will have other kinds of arrangements with other like-minded partners that actually then we can say that, look, we have a good thing going on here. And it's like life, right? We will find a way. We'll have to make sure that when other countries deal with us, they know that we are dealing with a principled, honest, and really straight shooter, right? We say it as it is because we don't have resources. We only have manpower. So we need to make sure that what has worked for us previously, which is actually adherence to rule of law and being quite open in our economy and making sure that other countries are able to trust in us, have their supplies parked with us. So then we have all this confluence of factors that actually say that Singapore is a safe place to actually park their investments, their oil here. And when things happen around the world, they know. And we can have all these resilience agreements with other countries as well. And we are exploring
this long-term planning has you know, boded well for Singapore. And we know that. We've seen that it provides that kind of stability. But going back to your analogy of being in the playground, and I picked to play with a different group of friends. You know, let's say we're playing with Australia and New Zealand. We just signed a few things with them. But then the other bully across the playground says, okay, I'm from the US. You want to be my friend? If you want to be my friend, you can't go hang out with China.
Yeah, what happens if the biggest bully is the biggest bully in the playground?
Well, there will never be the biggest bully. Because
there's
always be a few.
A few big bullies.
A few friends. We won't call them bullies per se, because we have never been in a position where we have been able to or allow ourselves to be bullied in a way, because we can work with anyone. And I think when you look at it, there are so many countries, so many interests. We need to find common interests, because like it or not, no group of nation or no group of people or society are out there not thinking about the betterment of their own people. And if we have a value add to that country, and it is for the betterment of both our peoples. And I'm pretty sure that we can strike some commonality.
But, you know, one thing that we always make a stand on is the fact that, like, we don't pick a side, right? Because we want to make sure that, you know, everyone is still friendly.
We
always say we don't pick a side.
We don't say that.
Okay.
We don't say that. We pick a side.
Okay.
And it's our side only.
Right, okay. Yeah, but we don't pick countries, right? So if, let's say, for example, like US and China, we don't pick, you know, either one or the other, correct?
Because we don't have to.
Friends. Yeah,
we don't have to. We pick what is in our interest. Let's say, because, you see, the Singapore people don't want us to be sitting on the fence. Mm. And also don't want us to be Team A or Team B. Mm. Singaporeans expect us to be Team Singapore, to sit with Singaporeans, to say and explain to Singaporeans that this is important for Singapore and Singaporeans, and sometimes the positions that we take will upset Team A or Team B, right? But who cares about that? Because my prerogative, my mandate is for the Singapore people.
So Iran has already said that, you know, the Strait of Hormuz will never go back to status quo, right? And they have also drafted a law that would permanently ban Israeli vessels, deny transit to nations deemed hostile by their alliance with the US. Now, if access to Hormuz depends on which side you're on, then what is our consideration now? I mean, of course, we want to be Team Singapore, but how do we react in a situation like that?
Well, we do have to go back to the first principle, which is we will not be able to trade away, negotiate away our principles, which will then impact us or affect us to the positions that we want to be taken in the Straits of Malacca and Singapore. If the same thing happened here, we want it to be open. We don't want to be blockaded. We don't want to depend on the highest bidder and pay through our noses in order to get supplies to Singaporeans. And we want the world to understand that, and we want the world to stand with us if that happens to us.
Yeah.
And that's why it's existential. And the moment we start to say, never mind, this one, one time only, it's like eating belacan, you know. You eat, one time. After you eat again, and again, again. So it's really, really... cannot. I mean, there is a red line. There is, and I truly believe other countries understand that, and it is a matter of, yes, if Iran so says that Strait of Hormuz will not be open, the trade force will find its way.
Yeah,
there would be there are other plans for by the neighboring states to do other mechanisms by which they can transport oil, transport goods to other parts of the world.
But it might be costly.
And put it this way. If they hold out like that for the next few years, we're going to find alternatives and everybody else will learn to survive in other ways.
Are we also looking for alternatives, you know, to make sure that we don't get, you know, strangled in this choke point? Because now...
I hope we've already got some in the works. I'm pretty sure.
I know you mentioned that we are bringing in different sources and looping, you know, shipping routes and stuff like that. I mean, are we making sure that all countries understand that this is what we will be headed towards?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was in Mauritius for the Indian Ocean Conference and also in the UN as well. And everyone's talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. And thinking about us in the same way. Because we have few things going for us. We have expertise, experience in handling transshipments and handling ports and all that. We have very well sought after services, not just in the region, but across the world as well. And really, looking at it, not just from a resilient supply chain standpoint, but also the provision of services, of such services, transshipment services, expertise, know-how that we can transplant to other regions, right, other countries, so that they can have almost a Singapore Inc. standard in their country, in their jurisdiction. And that's where we are coming towards.
So in other words, you're saying we are actively looking at alternatives, additional options. Can you reassure folks and say, yeah, new friends, of course. I mean, but are you confident enough to reassure Singaporeans and people listening in that basically, yeah, I mean, you know, while things look pretty bleak, I think we're always exploring ways to resolve this crisis. And at the end of the day, it should be all right.
The way that Singapore operates is not just a Singapore for Singaporeans, but Singaporeans for the world as well. Everybody has skin in the game with us, mm-hmm. and we also have stakes in the world. And the reason for that is to make sure that that people have a care as to what happens here in this neck of the woods. And particularly they place much value in what we have to say. Not because we are clever or what, but because we mean what we say and we say what we mean.
Several things that we spoke about here, are not just food for thought, but reminders that, you know, where we stand. I mean, it's one thing to be principled, but why we are principled and why we should, you know, stay that way. That's something that, yeah, I'm going to leave reminding my friends next time. If they say, maybe we should just like pay the toll, lah. You know,
we will not pay the toll. Okay. Anyhow, we've gone on this for quite a bit, I think, because it's an important issue and something so close to our hearts, even though we don't realize it. So if you have thoughts about this, any feedback you want to share, do drop us a note. We do love to hear from you. But otherwise, that's it for this week's episode of Deep Dive. Back again next week. Bye for now.
See you.